For those of you that like to discuss philosophy, you'll be delighted. Today is Philosophy Day. For those of you that don't, have to get used to it, because that's what it's about. These Chaturshloki verses are really something. Topics yesterday. What were some of the main points that we went over?
Non-deceptive.
A few aspects of being
performing non-deceptive penance.
Okay.
Non-deceptive, non-degrade penance. One is that one should be sinless. You mentioned that one should be because with devotional service, without being sinless, cannot be undegraded. And another aspect which you were telling was.
Forgot? It'll come back. Well, in that same verse, it's Lord Vishnu speaking to Brahma, saying, "Oh, sinless Brahma, it was I who spoke this, these syllables tapa to you." And then he says something specific about that tapa that you performed. What is the relationship between Lord Vishnu and the tapa? The relationship between Lord Vishnu and the statement is, the statement was mine. The relationship between the action and Lord Vishnu is, what is he saying?
He said that this tapa is not different from me.
Yeah.
This is,
what does that mean? How do we understand that statement?
Purpose of pleasing the Supreme Lord is the internal energy of the Lord.
So the internal energy of the Lord is not different than the Lord. And one who acts according to that internal energy, they're situating themselves in a position that's not different from the Lord. This becomes important in the first of the Chaturshlokis. Does that mean then you just render devotional service and you become not different than the Lord? No. But that's our topic today. But it's within the internal energy and distinct from being in the external energy. Okay? What's the characteristic of being in the external energy? We discussed that one. Anyone? Characteristic of being in the external energy. Remember the example I gave of Yogamaya being instructed by Krishna and to do her internal potency thing, and then later she would be respected in her external potency feature. But it was the same personality, and one is the internal potency is when the activities are not rendered for sense gratification, but the external potency is experienced by one who wants to fulfill material desires. external energy is experienced in that case. So what he's saying here is, you've experienced my internal potency, and that internal potency is not different from me, therefore you've experienced me, because you've done that very, very nicely in the mood of service. Here I am, disclosing myself to you. Okay? Any other points? We didn't talk about too much yesterday. Yeah?
The questions Lord Brahma is asking is related to his service. He's about to execute.
Okay.
And he's asking for basically two things. How? One is protection from the false ego. And the first one is
knowledge.
First one is knowledge, and protection from false ego is very important, because the three modes of nature are very powerful, and we will get bewildered thinking that it is me who is doing things.
Yeah. So, and knowledge helps in creating detachment from false ego. If it's non-duplicitous knowledge, if it's factual knowledge. But material knowledge helps one to become proud. There were two points in this in the purport of Lord Vishnu addressing Brahma as sinless, saying it was I who taught you to perform this penance, and the penance itself is none different than me. So it's penance in the transcendental kind of penance is meant for realization of the Lord. So there's two things that are required for realization of the Lord. That is the rendering of the indications of the Lord, and to do so out of love. Which is the idea, it's the other idea, not for increasing one's stature or status or any other thing. Which is the sinless idea. As well. Okay, so the Lord finishes speaking, Brahma starts to speak. What does Brahma say? He's taking the opportunity to receive the benediction that the Lord has offered him, and he begins speaking by saying, you already know everything. And so even before I speak, you know what I'm going to say, but you know that I need to ask certain questions. He asks four questions, which are to help him carry out his duty nicely. Can anybody remember? Let's try to go in sequence one by one. What's the first question? The paraphrased statement of that first question. Yeah.
What are the forms of the Lord in transcendence and in matter?
Okay. The second question. Yeah.
How are the Lord's different energies functioning?
Okay. The third one? Yes?
How does the Lord play with the different energies?
Yeah. The metaphor is spider and spider's web. And then the final of the four questions? How is he to carry out his duty. Please instruct me how I can carry out my duty. And specifically, it's in such a way that I'll be free from false pride and sense of doership. And then he asks explicitly, please protect me from that. Okay, so we'll go through, because it's good to fix these questions. They're good questions. They're the right questions to ask. Please explain. So the form in transcendence and in matter, you have a spiritual form. From the spiritual form, this material form, or you assume this mundane form, even though you don't have one. So that becomes very clear. The answer will make it very clear. The first of the Chaturshloki, which we're going to discuss this morning. The second question literally is, you have creation, annihilation, maintenance, and so many generations of living entities and permutations and combinations is how this is going on. How do you work with through the agency of your different energies? And then how do you move like a spider through his web? Your determination is infallible. How do you philosophically explain how you move about in your different manifestations within this creation? Then for his service, so that I may act instrumentally to generate living entities. And we understood that those living entities that Brahma generates, they're actually, the Lord generates them. Brahma is the instrument for generation. That there was some discussion about rasa. Can somebody remember what we talked about in relation to rasa? Brahma and Lord Vishnu have what kind? Brahma has what kind of rasa? This particular Brahma has what kind of rasa?
He has rasa of friendship.
Okay. Yeah.
But within that rasa, it is very clear that the Lord is the supreme.
Yeah. Predominator and predominated, but rasa of friendship. And within this, so that's now the Lord replies. This is text 31, where in the purport the four questions are summarized by Prabhupada's very mercifully giving us that. And then, so the Sanskrit for the verse, Jnanam paramaguyam me yad vijnana samanvitam sarahasyam tan adgam cha grahana gaditam maya. Grahana, try to take it up. Sarahasyam tad angam, so the sarahasyam means, what does sarahasyam mean?
Devotional
service. And he's also translated it in another way.
Mystery.
What's the relation between devotional service and mystery? Translating the same word in those two very different sounding ways. What's the relation? Yes?
Understanding Krishna and Lord Krishna's energies are very, very mysterious, but one can only understand them through devotion.
Okay. Yeah, simple answer. It's the qualification for understanding Krishna. And so the way of devotional service remains mysterious, other for others than devotees. They just don't get it. Offering your food, you know. It's a ritual. Just be honest, it's a ritual. No, it's not, it's, we're doing something, but it's not merely a ritual. Anyway, and go back. So anything. When world religion courses in America teach about the religions, I've been told by students who take those courses, that's their focus. Their focus is, what's the rituals? Are wearing tilak, shaving head, this color, that architecture, this, you know, procedure, and they bring a class in so that, you know, they want to study our rituals, aarti ceremony, guru puja, class giving ritual. It's a ritual. And we have different rituals, and that's the difference between this religion, that religion. It's the rituals, and that's the approach they take. And that's what they, to get the A in their exam, they have to know what the rituals are. They have to call them rituals. And so the whole thing remains a mystery. The real thing remains a mystery. For the materialist, for the speculator, and even for the yogi. Okay, so now, last two, we're going to cover almost two verses this morning. And the one that we'll cover first comes just before the Chaturshloki begins. This is Lord Vishnu speaking, text 32. And he gives this benediction. Basically, it's like the benediction that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Sanatana Goswami when he said, everything that I'm going to say, I bless you that you'll realize it. As I'm speaking it, may the understanding fully awaken in your heart, because that's needed, because you have to describe it later on in written form. And I'm not going to write books, you're going to write the books. So, by my mercy, it shall be realized by you fully. So, essentially, Lord Vishnu says the same to Lord Brahma. And you deserve it, Lord Brahma. Otherwise, it wouldn't even come before you what to speak of, give you this benediction. So, realization, the purport, is that realization is comes by the causeless mercy, mad anugrahat in the Sanskrit of the verse, by the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord. No one can say, well, there's a cause. The cause is he was pleased. And why was he pleased? Because Brahma fulfilled this tapa instruction. And he did it in a service mood. He not only did it, but he did it with a motivation. I just want to carry out service to the Supreme Lord. So Lord Vishnu was very pleased. Prabhupada explains in the purport, this is natural. He gives two examples and extends it to this situation. The father has several sons. The father will evaluate the worthiness of each son to receive confidential understandings, and he'll disclose confidential understandings to that worthy son. Not that he doesn't care about the other sons, but one who is capable of receiving a confidential disclosure, he'll disclose that. know, what's really meaningful to him. I found this out afterwards, but I'm the youngest of five children, and the eldest of our family is my older brother. So when my father was making his will, he explained to my older brother, "This, when I wrote this, this is what I mean. When I wrote that, that's what I mean. Monies are over here and over there and that in that place. And this is what I'd like you to do with my body and da 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 da." He explained all those, you know. So it was his, he held him in confidence. The rest of us didn't hear any of that stuff. And when it came time to take care of executing the will, my brother was the executor of the will because my father had disclosed to him all these different confidential things. And so forth and so on. You know, when it came to how would we take care of our mother and who would, you know, he had the understanding of what our father wanted, and he saw to it. He had that confidential service. We all did some service, but he had that very confidential position of disclosure. Natural. Another example that's given is an important man in society. He isn't going to disclose everything to everybody, but there are certain persons that he holds very confidentially. And then when it comes to finer understandings and deeper understandings and confidential understandings, we'll be fit to receive it in the right way. Not just so in the purport, Prabhupada is making this specific statement. Persons can't know the absolute truth just by their education and intellectual gymnastics. By the intellectualizing process, we'll never know the Lord. He's not accessible that way. In the verse, the first, Wendian evolutionists, if they come across some archaeological find, they're by predisposition, they're going to interpret it a certain way. And if it just doesn't match, it's an anomaly and it goes into the secret bin. Just doesn't get dealt with. Or some explanation, interpretation, jugglery, something. Or just it disappears. And then another anomaly, and then another anomaly, and then a whole plentitude of anomalies. Wait a minute. But they, you know, they have a predisposition. So that's part of the thing, is there's a predisposition. I want to be God. That's the predisposition. I want, so everything in the Vedas has got to point to that. So that's my read on everything it says. So it says no form, it means no form. But another part besides predisposition is the confidentiality or mystery of the Vedas, especially the devotional understanding. It remains a mystery. They don't get it. They don't get it because they don't want to get it. Okay. Prabhupada makes a nice statement. Even a devotee who's not so danced, they can get it. It's simple. For a very advanced like Brahma, he's seeing the Lord's spiritual form face to face. He certainly gets it. But even not a very advanced devotee, spiritual form can exist that's not material form. It's real easy. For a devotee, it's real easy. The beginning devotee will see that this argument is a false argument. Why must there be no spiritual form? Because it says the Lord has no form? Well, that's easily explained, no material form. But here, the Lord is disclosing his form and saying that I'm going to give you the ability to understand this form. Color, activities, detail, form. So, in a very nice, strong way, Prabhupada says such men with a poor fund of knowledge do not know the Lord is the Lord eternally, and that one cannot become the Lord by meditation for millions of years or by mental speculation for billions of years. But this is their predisposition. They want to become the Lord. Well, they cannot. Will not. Ever. And Prabhupada makes the statement very, very obvious, but yad rupa guna karma kaha, there it is, that this refutes impersonalism, the form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the activities of the Lord. He's personal. And then the conclusion. So the essence of all of this is these things are meant to be realized. Back to our not just intellectualized. These are meant to be realized. And they can be realized through the medium of devotional service. So now our next devotional service is to try to wade through the first of the Chaturasloki verses. Aham evasam evagre nanyad yad sat asat param paschad aham tad et tachchad ya yo vashishyeta sosmyaham. Well, this is a verse that impersonalists go to town with. See, I told you so. Because they have their predisposition and they've got to interpret everything in a certain way, and they're not engaged in devotional service. They're not hearing from Lord Vishnu or one who is in disciplic succession from one who has heard from Lord Vishnu. So they're not eligible, and therefore they have to derive an impersonal or a non-devotional conclusion. So they like this one. Before creation, I exist. During creation, I alone exist. After cosmic annihilation, I alone exist. So what exists? Brahman. Because that's what I is Brahman. Because then comes the interpretation. It's the impersonal within Krishna. That's what exists. There it is. Impersonalism. So, that's certainly not the message that Lord Vishnu is giving to Brahma. And let's see how Prabhupada and our acharyas deal with this. So one one's straight. So this is the what was the question again that this is addressing? The first question?
What are the forms of the Lord in transcendence and in matter?
Okay. So this is the prelude to the next verse, which is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, the Lord and His energies. There's strains of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva in this also. So before we just like dive in to the grist of these arguments, just bear in mind what Lord Vishnu is answering. How is the Lord, who is all spiritual, manifest Himself in a material form, although He has none? No material form. Well, He's manifesting this material form, the cosmic creation, through the agency of His energy. So the second question is, how do you work? How do you function? Is that the word you used? Function through your various energies. But this is the energies when they're fully manifest. There is a state of oneness between the energies and the source of the emanation, the source of emanation of those energies. So Prabhupada goes through, so that's a strain in this statement, first of the Chaturshloki verses. Now how are we to understand that as Vaishnavas or as followers of Lord Brahma? How are we to understand that? It is true, Prabhupada starts with, it is true that there is a oneness between the energies of the creation and the Lord. But while it's true, so then we have the principle of I. So there's these two persons, Brahma, who is hearing, and Vishnu, who is speaking. So they're both of the same principle I, but are they the same principle I, but are they the same entity? And then he quotes from the Upanishads, Katha Upanishad. Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yobididati Kaman. So there's the predominated one, I, and the predominator, I. And the predominated, I, is plural, and the predominator, singular. The maintainer and the maintained. Singular, maintainer. Plural, maintained. Eko, bahunam. One, bahunam. Many. Yo vidyati kaman. So there is a relationship between the predominator and the predominated, although, and there's a distinction between the two, although they are of the same principle I. Granted, Krishna is saying it, same principle I, but there's the predominator I and the predominated I. So within that oneness we find very, very clear identification of difference. And he goes through a list of several differences. Another difference is, so this is difference number two, you note takers. Predominator and predominated difference, that's one difference. Now there's another difference. It's a difference of personalities. Vishnu is one personality, Brahma is another personality. Then there's another difference. It's a chronological difference. Before even Brahma existed to be the predominator or predominated I, Lord Vishnu existed. It was chronological. And then, after some time, even Brahma and all the paraphernalia of existence, which is one with the Supreme Lord, disappears. So there's a chronological difference. Then there's a, I guess you could say there's an ontological difference, but although the principal I is there, which what's the word? It's granted, or that's a given. There's a eternality feature of one and a non-eternal feature of the other. So there's the creator and the created. Now let's go back to the oneness. Prabhupada speaks about this. It's because it's mentioned in the Vedas. Why is it there in the Vedas? Well, it's there because it's for real. There is a oneness between the source of emanation and the that which is emanated. But how do we apply that? Because we can say it in a philosophical way, but it's part of the process of self-realization. Prabhupada says it's for realization of oneself in spiritual psychology. It may be convenient to assume oneself to be the same principle as the absolute truth. Here's the application part of this oneness thing. Sometimes Prabhupada even writes this in his own commentaries, explains it. If you can understand the nature of yourself, because you're part and parcel of the Supreme, you can understand the Supreme. Not in fullness, because we're tiny and the Lord is unlimitedly complete, unlimitedly great. But by understanding a grain of rice, you understand the situation of the whole pot of rice. So if you want to understand the whole pot, you just study one grain. But that doesn't mean that the grain is the pot. That would be wrong. So for he's using this language, the spiritual psychology. There is a oneness dimension, and yet there are these very, very clear differences. So and that's almost two pages out of one, two, another four more to go. So, Prabhupada continues in the purport. I'm at the almost done with page 540. I guess you have the same numbering system. Yeah? No. Oh. Well, I can't help you then. Okay, so you can find the paragraph that begins, the other feature of the statement is, the other feature of the statement. So I've covered everything before that. Brief, summarized. The other feature of the statement is that the Supreme Truth is Bhagavan, or the personality of Godhead. The personality of Godhead and his kingdom have already been explained. So it exists. It's not void. It has, Brahma saw it. This energy, that energy, personalities, gatekeepers, doorkeepers, guards, personified Vedas, all kinds of things. In the spiritual world, there hasn't even been anything created yet to think that it's material. It's real. It's variegated. It exists. And so Prabhupada is taking the opportunity to state that there is a difference between the create head and the source of that creation. One has eternal existence with variegatedness and personality and different energies, replete with so many energies, and then there's a created portion. So that the question again is your form in transcendence, in your form in matter, although you have none. So it's a reflection, but still even the reflection, there's the Lord's inferior energy involved in that. So now I'm carrying over to there's quote by Maharaj Parikshit, second canto, chapter 8, that's the previous chapter to this one. Maharaj Parikshit is asking questions in chapter 8, but he also makes a statement, text 10. How does the personality of God of the cause of creation, maintenance, annihilation, who is always freed from the influence of illusory energy, and is the controller of the same, lie in everyone's heart? Similar is a question of Vidura. It doesn't give the translation, but it's the third canto. But the important part, Prabhupada explains, during the annihilation of the creation, who serves the Lord lying on Shesha, etc. This means that the transcendental Lord, with all his name, fame, quality, and paraphernalia, exists eternally. Same, another quote, Skanda Purana, doesn't give the translation, but paraphrases it. Even the devotee of the personality of Godhead, devotees are not annihilated during the period of the entire annihilation of the material world, not to speak of the Lord himself. The Lord is ever existent in all three stages of material change, which is what this verse is saying. The verse itself is saying, Lord Vishnu is telling, declaring, I exist in all three phases. And so what's the relationship of the form and matter? Well, it has a non-different relationship, but it has a predominate head feature and a temporal feature, unlike me. And the various personalities who exist, well, they're existing eternally, as I exist eternally, but they have these temporary forms and names. I'll just go a little bit further because this is all heavy philosophy. It's not the same as nice stories. It's hard to keep up with it all. I'm going to read now the paragraph that starts with, the impersonalist adduces no activity in the Supreme. You find where I am? But in this discussion between Brahma and the Supreme Personality of God, the Lord is said to have activities also. Then he explains that statement. As he has his form and quality, that's specific. But his activities, that's right in the Sanskrit of this, of the previous verse. The activities of Brahma and the other demigods during the maintenance of the creation are to be understood as the activities of the Lord. This is the relationship between the form of in matter, the form in transcendence. What about Brahma and the non-difference of Brahma and the demigods and everybody else? Well, they're doing something on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So in one sense, it's the activity of the Supreme Lord. Again, remember that Vishnu said, it's through penance that I create. But Brahma is going to do the creating, but through penance. So he just is the instrument, that's all. But then, so then what is the Lord doing? In one sense, he's doing everything. In another sense, just like in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he's doing nothing. What is he doing? And as far as creation is concerned, he's doing nothing. Everybody else is doing it. So this is a Chinchaveda Veda Tattva, as far as the forms and then the energy. So does question. An exam question. Everybody will pay attention. exam question. Does the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy applies to the Lord's and His energies? That's a correct statement. Question. Does the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy also apply to the forms that the Lord expands, as they relate to the original form of the Supreme Lord? The answer is yes. That's what he's being said. So there's the forms of the demigods. They have an Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva relationship with the Supreme Lord. They derive, they're agents of the Lord. They're doing his work so that he can do no work. He says it in Bhagavad Gita, there's no work that I have to perform. Doesn't he say that? He certainly says that. But then he says, but then I do perform activities, because if I didn't, what would happen? Everybody would imitate my activity and do nothing. So I do things not out of obligation. There's no duty for me. And so therefore he exhibits his transcendental lila to show us the way. But as far as the main business of this creation, which is the question that Brahma asked, well, it's just expanded from his energies, and through the agency of those personalities, they're doing something on his behalf. So it's his work. Therefore, there's a non-difference. And then Prabhupada gives the everyday example that we hear so often when he explains this thing, is there's a big industrialist and he's off on the golf course or hanging out somewhere with his buddies or just having a good time doing stuff. But all he has to do is pick up the phone and say, you know, stop this production, buy that, sell that, and, you know, fire this guy, hire 10,000 people, and hangs up the phone. Back to his golf game. On his energy, the thing is happening. So he's doing nothing, but it's all going on his energy. And so even if there's, for a material person, what to speak of? Krishna. Existing on his energy. So there's that. The question is, what's the relationship? How do you understand your form in transcendence and your material form, although you have none? It's going on through the agency of his energies, which he's sanctioning. Or as Prabhupada says, everything is done under his command. Then, I'll just try to do this smoothly and quickly, but then he goes back to the form and formless topic. So now the materialists to say the Lord has no form. Because he already tied it to, as he has form, he also has activity. But you can't see his activity because others are doing the activity for him. You can't see his form. Doesn't mean he doesn't have a form. If the sun disappears, we say, does that mean the sun doesn't exist? We could say the sun doesn't exist, but that's child's talk. The night swallowed the sun, and it stopped existing. Well, it's not so. The sun does exist, but it's not within your vision. So, we should appreciate that the Vedic statements, he's just adding to this. Lord has no activity, Lord has no form, he has no material activity, no material form. But he's inducing things to act, he's directing things to happen, put the planets, so forth and so on. Then he extends that. So form, formlessness, activity, no activity, he extends that to another understanding, the next paragraph in your printouts here, in the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad. There's a hymn, a mantra, which indicates that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even before the appearance of the Purusha incarnation exists. So this is another chronological. Krishna exists even before the Purusha avatar, who expands and maintains and withdraws and holds it at rest and expands and maintains and holds it. Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad says he existed in his spiritual form even before this Purusha avyakta and avyakta business goes on. And even Shankaracharya said it, Narayana Parovyakta. So there is a distinction between these two, the Lord in his form of transcendence and the Lord in his form of this material creation. They're inseparable. The creation doesn't exist without the Creator. But one chronologically or eternally is existing and performs activities there, such as creation. That's an activity, big time activity. So it doesn't. It exists on his strength, like the industrialist. All the stuff that's going on in his many factories, it's going on his strength. But he's not involved either. So that's how we understand the no activity, no form. We should understand it that way. I alone exist. It's not homogenized. It's not formless, impersonal message. It does take a little brain work to understand this, but it's not just brain work, it's hearing it in a mood of devotion. That is, it's understandable. So just go a little bit further and retire from this exercise. Prabhupada introduces, actually, as I recall, the Chaitanya Charitamrita rendering is simpler. I was thinking about that when it says some of the same things, but it says it in a very simple way. Anyway, we have the Bhagavatam, and so he brings up this remote cause and immediate cause. Have you ever heard that terminology before? In another jaw-breaking, brain-breaking, mental speculation-breaking section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's discussed where this is the idea is that Krishna is sarva karana karanam. He's the cause of all causes, and so for prakriti there's the ingredient cause. Anyway, I won't go into the whole thing. Very, very intricate, interesting, complicated. I just try to keep it simple. Prakriti is said to be the immediate cause. Like, in Bhagavad Gita, what is Krishna's question? What does Krishna say about who is the performer of activities? The self-realized soul understands that he neither creates activity nor creates fruits from that activity, nor induces other people to act. Who's doing all those things?
Modes of nature.
Huh?
Modes of nature.
So that's the immediate cause. So the immediate cause moves by the agency of the remote cause. Krishna mayadhyakshena prakriti. Krishna is the cause of all causes, and the immediate cause is causing so many activities, and living entities going along for the ride. Sometimes liking the ride, sometimes not liking the ride, but going along for the ride. Sometimes thinking I'm the doer, most of the time thinking I'm the doer, sometimes getting fried from that whole program and trying to stop, get off and vomit or something, like a bad ride at the on the Ferris wheel, getting sick and just, I've had enough of this, I'm getting off of this stupid ride. But he can't get off the ride because that's his position until he takes shelter of the cause of all causes. So this is to help us in that conviction, philosophical conviction, using as Brahma is getting this lesson from Lord Vishnu so that he can do his work and not be deluded, it would help us to also understand these things for that reason. That's the reason for going through this. It's, otherwise, who needs it? Just chant Hare Krishna to be happy. But we're sometimes chanting Hare Krishna and struggling and not so happy, because we're in this false ego program of thinking that we're the doer. So this is helping us understand how we're not the doer. Okay, we're about to cross the finish line. In that same paragraph that starts, in some of the Vedas it is also said, I'm reading that paragraph, down five lines towards the end, it says, the Lord's impersonal feature is existent in the material world because by material senses or material eyes, the Lord cannot be seen or perceived. That's not so clear. Let's hear how Prabhupada explains that. One has to spiritualize the senses before one can expect to see or perceive the Supreme Lord. But He is always, He, capital He, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is always engaged in His personal capacity, and He is eternally visible to the inhabitants of Vaikuntha Loka, eye to eye. Therefore, He is materially impersonal, just as the executive head of the state may be impersonal in the government offices, although he is not impersonal in the government house. Like there's this saying that bureaucracy is impersonal, right? But behind the impersonal bureaucracy, there's a person. So this is Prabhupada's statement. We're experiencing the impersonalism of this material manifestation. Who's behind all this anyways? I'm fried. Where are they? It's impersonal in its operations, but behind it there's a person. This is the form of the Lord in matter, the form of the Lord in transcendence. So it makes sense if one's experiencing or feeling the effect of the impersonal manifestation here, well, the Supreme must be impersonal. And all this is just false. I just convinced myself enough that this is false and what's real is impersonal. I feel better. At least I convinced myself to feel better. But that doesn't mean that that's the reality any more than the sun went out of existence because it's dark. Or government is impersonal, there's no person behind it. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is not impersonal in his abode, which is always nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi, from the first sloka. Therefore, this is it, this is the last I'm going to... Therefore, both the impersonal and personal features of the Lord are acceptable, as mentioned in the revealed scripture. But what's the relationship between the two? Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, 14:27, Bhagavad Gita. He applied, and so the pot is the covering, vivarta, and the sky is cosmic consciousness in their application of that metaphor. Yeah.
You were explaining the example of how the pot is made from earth and the potter working with it, with the tools. I couldn't quite understand its relation with the discussion we were having of the Supreme Lord.
How it relates is in terms of the concept of causation. So in the verse, Krishna's being the cause means that the effect has an inseparable relation with the cause. Because there is no existence outside of and apart from or independent from the source. And therefore there's a state of oneness. Paschadaham, and aham evasaneva agre. At the beginning, at the end, and in the middle, only aham. So, but if we explore a little more thoughtfully, a little more carefully, we'll find layers of cause and effect within that inseparable oneness. Such as Brahman causing creation, and Krishna being the source of Brahman. Oh. The Mahatattva is like the clay, and the shaping of the clay is like the efforts that we make to shape the pot or to do our thing, whatever it is. But although we're doing our thing and the material energy does exist, we can't do anything if the Supreme Lord doesn't sanction. That's why this humility we were speaking about this morning, that's where that comes in. It's recognizing that the position of the personality of Godhead. And going even further with that, and this isn't answering your question, but it's referring back to this morning. In Braja, they don't have an idea of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't have that Aishvarya cognizance. Rather, it's their love for Krishna alone that impels them to feel, apart from Krishna, I can't exist. Anyway, back to our... That's intense. It's very, very... such feeling-oriented, loving-oriented realm of the Supreme Lord. So back to our position. if we recognize from the text, we recognize Krishna's position as the sarva karana karanam, or the cause and the inseparable relation of things, we will not have to become bewildered and find it hard and perhaps doubtful about the statement of Krishna's relationship with all things, or become impersonalist and take it in the absolute sense of oneness when he describes this thing in this verse, if we can understand the layers of causation. And other statements in scripture that indicate these layers of causation. Material nature alone, Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, is the cause of events in this world. Okay, where does material nature come from? Where does Prakriti come from? It comes from the Mahatattva. Where does Mahatattva come from? We were reading, it manifests from Brahman. And where is Brahman? How is that situated? It's an aspect of the Absolute Truth based upon the existence of the Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So now we have this oneness of all these layers of cause and effect, but still there's a predominating cause of all causes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead with the cause of all causes. That's the connection between the verse and these remote cause, immediate cause, and there's other terminologies. Yeah.
Generally, like, we take less interest in the details, like, of Krishna, like the details. It is given here, Mahatattva and Prakriti and Krishna's position. Yeah. But like, does it mean that unless one has a very clear understanding of all these details, the devotion will necessarily be sentimental or something?
No. Do the gopis know all these things? Prabhupada has explained, well, I think we discussed this last time I was here. And same answer. What's the role of all this detailed scriptural knowledge? Well, it helps us get a foothold. It helps us clear away doubts. It helps us, Prabhupada said it this way, it helps us become convinced and stay convinced. And we need to be convinced. We need to have our doubts removed. We need to have all the big, massive misconceptions and attachments to those misconceptions, material conceptions, to be addressed. But we can also be simple in heart and just accept without all the detailed knowledge. And that doesn't leave us in the mere sentimental category. What I said last time, we have, by having some intelligence, we have a blessing and a curse at the same time. We have to put it to use, otherwise it'll beat us up. But then if we put it to use, then it can be useful. And particularly it can be useful to convince other people that have the blessing and curse too. And help them clear their doubts. And our great acharyas, they commented on these things. You know, the details of Sankhya and so forth. We were, just before coming to India, in New York, we were reading Fifth Canto Bhagavatam, so the same question came up there. Does someone have to know all this stuff in order to go back to Godhead? Because we're good. And if we don't need to know it, then why is it here?
It's part of transcendental knowledge. And one who knows it with deep conviction will never fall prey to life comes from matter. And there's a lot of that, as you probably all know very well. It's a predisposition. Anyway, it's a lot of that garbage out there. If we don't give something else, we don't have something else to give and don't give it, then generation after generation after generation after generation, and they're getting spoon-fed all that atheistic poison in megadoses, and then religion will seem to be archaic and dumb and insubstantial, etc. So there's a responsibility to, at least to a certain degree, understand these things as a service to others and propagate as a service to others.
Last week you were speaking that there is a lot of complacency which has been present amongst us.
Mm.
And there were some discussions amongst us on how we were complacent. But can you elaborate, Maharaj, on how you see complacency present in us?
Why don't we do this tomorrow morning?
Yes.
So we won't be falling asleep during tomorrow morning's class. Shri Prabhupada.